This is the Volleyball Coaching Wizards podcast, covering everything coaching, motivated and inspired by interviews and conversations with some of the world's great volleyball coaches. To learn more about the project, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com. Now here are your hosts, John Foreman and Mark Levigeau.
Hey there, welcome to episode 3 of the Volleyball Coaching Wizards podcast. Although Mark and I didn't actually plan it this way, we ended up using 3 interview clips in this particular show. The focus here is on adapting things and learning things and using things from other coaches, presumably for the most part from coaches that we give credibility to or think of as being successful or whatever the case may be. So we've got a clip from Tom Tate, another one from Iraj Arabi Fard, and a third one from Giovanni Guidetti. Just as a bit of background, Tom Tate is pretty much the father of the Penn State volleyball programs, both men and women. As you could hear in his interview, he goes back to the very beginnings when the programs were both still club. He initially coached both of them at the same time. Eventually handed the women's program off to Russ Rose, who most people at this point know as having a long and successful career. He stuck with the men's program for a bit longer and then eventually handed that off as well when he felt like the university was going to give it full support and funding and bring in somebody to do a national search and things like that, all of which he talks about in his interview. Tom has since gone on to do a lot of work in coaching education, work with USA Volleyball and that sort of thing. The second clip comes from Iraj Arabi Fard, who is a member of the AVC Volleyball Coaching Hall of Fame. He won over 500 matches in his coaching career at the collegiate level, where he's also a professor of physical education. He's been retired from the day-to-day coaching for a number of years now, but remains an active researcher, still writes a lot of articles on volleyball, still spends a lot of time consulting and doing coaching education, including working with USA Volleyball and other federations around the world. And finally, Giovanni Guidetti is currently, at this time, the head coach of the women's national team for the Netherlands, having just relatively recently taken that over following a stint with the German national team and previously the Bulgarian national team. He also coaches at the club level in Turkey, has won medals in the Champions League, the CEV Champions League, as well as the FIVB World Club Championships and a couple of Coach of the Year selections in his native Italy. Each of them looks at the subject in a slightly different way, but it all tends to speak in the same sort of direction. So we'll actually start this episode off with the Tom Tate clip and go from there.
It was one of those things where whoever was at the top of the heap as a coach, whatever that individual did, everybody just copied. There were no questions. Why are you doing this? Wouldn't it be better to do that? There was none of that. It was just bowing down to the guru and saying, yes, I will do this because you do that. Or your team won the championship, and therefore you must be doing everything right. Instead of asking yourself, well, wait a minute, why did they win the championship? Maybe it's because they're the only team that had a team full of athletes. And everybody else had much lesser athletes. And it was crazy to me. I would see, and to some extent I'm still seeing some of this, at the time out in California in the Players Clinic, volleyball was being influenced in the United States most heavily by what was going on in Japan. And in Japan, one of the big emphases was you must contact the ball, if you're forearm passing, at the midline of the body. And so everybody spent hours and hours and hours trying to figure out how to get the midline of the body behind the ball to pass it to target. And when you look at it from just a common sense standpoint, you know that the midline of your body doesn't touch the ball. It's the forearms that contact the ball and that make the ball go wherever it's going to go. So it's got to be the forearms that you focus on to try to get that platform to be where it needs to be to receive the ball and send it off in the direction and with the kind of trajectory that you need to get it to target. And it doesn't matter where the midline in the body is, or which foot is forward, or whether you've got both feet on the ground, or one foot on the ground, or no feet on the ground, when those when that platform contacts the ball. Again, I'm glad that I didn't come into coaching from a player's perspective, having had lousy coaching as a player. There was a distinct advantage to me, and it forced me to really ask constantly why, and examine things carefully rather than just copying.
Right. The bit that I like, I mean, I like the whole comment and the whole mind process that Tom has here, but one of the things, one of the aspects of what he talks about actually is something similar to what Vital Heinen recently said in an interview. And Vital was making the comment, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, I assume, that winning makes you right as a coach. And Tom was obviously making a very similar sort of point, saying everybody's following, well, you know, he's calling the guru, but whoever won the last championship or whoever's coaching the national team or whoever is in, you know, a position of high prestige. And a lot of this respect is, some of it's earned, some of it's deserved, but in some cases it's not necessarily based on necessarily coaching ability, especially when you get into a position of just saying, hey, you know, that team won the league championship, we should do what that team does, because as Tom says, sometimes it's just a question of athleticism. Some teams just have better talent than other teams, and they're going to win. And sometimes they're going to win, maybe even oftentimes they're going to win as a result of that talent and not as a result of the coaching, or and potentially despite the coaching. So we can't necessarily assume that just because somebody's got a winning record or won a lot of championships or whatever the case may be, that they're an awesome coach and that we should do exactly what they should do. The reality is you need to take a look at the underlying causes and reasons for what they're doing and see if that makes sense.
I think I look at it from kind of from a slightly different perspective. The point is an exceptionally valid point. Coming from Australia, we have, I guess, an inferiority complex in lots of things, but in volleyball we have historically had an inferiority complex that anybody who came from outside must know better than us. And we've done in Australia some ridiculous things that didn't hold up to any sort of logical reasoning, just because the person who did it came from outside Australia and must know better. So the idea of the guru, and particularly the examples that Tom gave of Japan, some of them rang not only true but triggered memories. Not all of them good. Not about Japan specifically, but about that kind of idea. I think to the point of why coaches win or why teams win, each coaching situation, I think, is unique, and It's a combination, an interaction of the groups, of the players, the staff, the situation, the opponents. Obviously, play an active role in the wins and losses of the of a particular team. And I think all coaches have valid elements. All successful coaches and have valid elements in what they do, but. It has to be considered in context, and your context is almost certainly different from that coach's.
Right. Actually, to your point about the Australian inferiority complex, that sounds an awful lot like what Mick Haley said about U.S. coaches in say, the 60s and the 70s, when he made the point that anybody who came in from outside, whether it's Japanese or Korean or Soviet or whatever, everybody was automatically taking what they were saying as being exactly what they need to do without necessarily going back and trying to figure out, well, what really does make sense and what's biomechanically sound and, you know, all these other things. So, yeah, it's not just the Aussies, and I'm sure that probably applies to a lot of other cultures. Because I think even in England, I kind of saw a bit of this. Because they, inherently kind of say, well, we've only ever qualified for an Olympics because we hosted, those sorts of things. So they want to bring in external experts to help out in the coaching ranks, and that's certainly it's good for cross fertilization of ideas and broadening the perspective on things. But as you say, it doesn't necessarily automatically mean that you're bringing in better ideas.
No. I mean, there's lots of ideas, this also is a theme that one of the future interviewers, Iraj, brings up about questioning those guys who are successful and not just blindly copying it.
I developed an understanding that this drill can help my team, this drill is false or not good. And even if I would bring a good team, a good drill back home, I would never present it the same way. You always have to alter it somehow to match the ability and the interest and the level of your team. So as soon as I was able to do that, then I got away from copying people. You copy some people and you don't have the same situation and you may not get the same result. It is best for you as a coach to develop a sense of what your team needs and go for somebody who has found a better way of training. And even if you find the right type of drill, you just come and adjust it to your team. And that's how I really would do. Another thing, coaches don't like to tell other people their specifics or secrets. I, every year, had shared my ideas with coaches at the national level. Why? Because I don't think even if one person of your team changes, the chemistry of the team changes, the goals and their experience change, and you can't have 1 year of coaching and 5 years of repeating it. You see what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
You sometimes coach 1 year and good drills and so forth, that became tradition, and you repeat it 5 years, 6 years. Well, I never believed on that. I always believe that my next year training should be based on me sitting down and seeing the changes and coming up with new stuff and not be the same as last year. Your competition change, your environment change, your facilities change, your budget change, your chemistry of the team change. So you really have to every year decide a program for your own and a training method of your own team.
I think that it's also one of my themes the advice that I always give to people is that you have to question, you have to ask why something works like that, ask why it should work, and I think for all coaches this is the most important thing.
Right. Yeah. I one of the reasons I really, I mean, you write this interview, and we'll talk about some other stuff in another episode.
Yeah.
He's all over the place in terms of different ideas and perspectives, and having been a physical education professor and academic and researcher, he brings in a different side of things than a lot of us who come more directly through the coaching ranks necessarily think about. But he talks about when he first started in volleyball, at least in coaching terms, where he was kind of being pushed one way or the other based on whoever he just last saw at a seminar or read about or whatever.
Yeah.
And, until he kind of realized, hey, I need to do things that are right for my team in my situation this season.
Yes.
And that's going to be different from what Joe Coach is doing with his team.
Yep.
And it's going to be different for me next year with next year's team, even if it's the same group of players
Yep.
in the same conference and all of that.
Yeah, Iraj speaks specifically about drills and that drills aren't replicable from one group to another. And I think that's a really great point because even assuming you have the right numbers of people, the relationships between the skills, some teams are better at this and better at that, and if you have two dominating players, a drill doesn't work the same as if everybody's the same level, and maybe the gym's a different size. You don't have the same equipment. There's a dozen reasons at least why you can't just copy a drill from one context to the next, and the theme is the same. Not following a guru, not accepting or not copying drills. The general point and the specific point, I think, are the same.
Well, and speaking more broadly to something that you and Sue Gazansky talked about, the idea that some coaches want to hoard their information and their knowledge and not share it with anybody else.
Yes.
Whereas others who are extremely open and will talk about whatever at any given point in time and aren't worried that if they, tell somebody something, they're giving away, quote unquote, their secrets. And Iraj makes the point that, every situation is different. So even if I tell you everything that I'm doing right now, I'm not going to be doing it next year, or maybe even next week or next month.
The thing I love most about that is that it's almost paraphrasing me. So. Obviously, his point's an incredibly wise point. What can I say? But
there you go.
It's true that you can't, even if you try to do it the same, you can't do it the same. It's
right.
Just impossible. And if we bring in another future interview with Giovanni Guidetti, and he talks about the coach has to be authentic and follow. And this is me paraphrasing or extending a little bit, but follow his beliefs and that he has a consistent basis for what he does in his work.
Well, if you see the Americans speaking about, I mean, I saw your website, and you in your website you have McGowan.
Yeah.
So when McGowan speak about volleyball, he's showing 6-7 coaches on boxes attacking on the net.
Yeah.
And he's telling, in America we never do this. And then you go to Brazil and you go to see the training of Bernardino, and you see for 3-player 10 coaches all in the boxes.
Yeah.
And they're training like this. And then you watch the history of volleyball. I mean, I don't have the exact number, but let's say United States have 20 gold medal, Brazil have 20 gold medal. So how you can say they are wrong, they are right, they are right, they are wrong, and they have seen volleyball in a very different way. different way. And if we put Russian, they see in another different way, and they are winning. So, and I think this is the key of our job. So it's stupid, I think, to just marry a philosophy and just go with there, because there is not one philosophy. There are many, many ways to achieve the result. It's according on first of what we think is correct, because I believe that the first thing that we have to be like a coach is that we have to be authentic. I don't know if it's good English, authentic.
You
know, but I think
it's perfect.
You understand what I mean. So we have to be ourselves every time. So we have to do something that we believe, and there is no the true about nothing. You know, that is what I think mostly.
He uses the word authentic, which I think is especially for a non-English speaker, a perfect explanation for what it is. A coach has to be authentic, and coaches, I think, often think that they can pull the wool over their players' eyes and trick them into doing things, but it's not my experience that that players are easily fooled.
No, I think players are probably a lot smarter than most coaches necessarily think they are.
I'm certain. You know,
I mean, it's really easy as coaches to be kind of living in our own heads. Yeah. And we need to do this, and I need to do that, and, you know, I got to tell the players this, and I got to teach them to do that, without taking into account the fact that unless you're dealing with very, very beginning-level players, you're talking about people with at least some degree of experience, and experience in how they do it.
Yes.
Because no matter how you want them to do it, from whatever perspective you take it, everybody's a little bit different. And that means everybody's going to do things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
No, I was going to just make a comment about, you know, Giovanni talks about, you know, you go into the U.S. gym and they train one way, and then you go into the Brazilian gym and they train a different way. You go to the Russian gym and they train yet another way, and yet if you look at the medal counts and the trophy counts, they're all in the same basic band of success.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody obviously thinks their way is the best way, but I have yet to see any specific research that tells us which way is the best way.
I think that Carl McGowan might say that there's a lot of research that says that their way is the best way.
I think when you talk about the game teaches the game and the, the random versus block and the retention, then obviously you have quite a bit of scientific research that supports that. But at the same time, you've got other things that are going on. As you say, you know, you've got different cultures and different historical perspectives on things, and just as a result, none of these cultures are going to train the same way anyway. Even if you gave them the book and said, "This is how everybody should do it," there's always going to be some sort of nuance.
Yeah, I think to extend Giovanni's point about which is the right way and how do you choose the right way, I think I'm convinced that the most important thing is that that there is a concept, and the concept is not just a superficial thing, but it follows all the way through in how you want to play the game, what style you want, what tactics and strategies you use, how you train, how you interact with the groups, and I think.
Yeah.
Those things are unique, have to be unique for each person, but they have to also be they have to be there. They have to be. It has to exist. And if the coach has a concept, and I picked this phrase up from Big Bang Theory, but has a logical internal consistency. If one thing moves on to the next thing, then I think that explains how it is that there are so many different ways that can that are successful, even if from the outside we might not understand why it is that they are or how it is that they are.
Right. And to kind of extend that, to bring up something in yet another interview, the one with Anders Christensen,
yep,
where he talks about the idea of selling to the team,
yeah,
which I know others have used very similar terminology, but convincing. If what you're saying is not consistent and doesn't follow some sort of logical progression, then you're going to lose the players.
Yep.
At a certain point, they're just going to stop believing you.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
And you can only maintain that logical consistency or that consistency if you're authentic. If you're forever trying to copy somebody else or forever following a guru, then it's much more difficult to keep that consistency. It's like being caught in a lie, basically.
Yeah. And as much as we've heard coaches, and Arise spoke this specifically, and I can remember others that we've interviewed have said it as well, about being shifted every time they went to a new clinic. I've heard players talk about it in regards to their coaches. Like, we started every new preseason with whatever new techniques coach had learned, during traveling around the states, doing camps with other coaches or whatever, or going off to the convention,
yeah,
or something like that. So the players definitely notice it. It's,
oh, yeah.
And I've heard of situations where coaches have completely changed the whole technical structure of the way they taught the sport from one season to the next, which is a bit of a shock.
I think you can do that. Obviously, if you move from one team, if you start with a new team, you can do something different. But to change everything all in one time, it essentially gives a message to the players that I didn't know what I was doing before, which implies why should I know what I'm doing now? And
exactly.
Right. It's like I said, the coach has to have a concept, has to have his idea, his or her philosophy, methodology, and follow that one through. And you can always introduce new drills and make tweaks here and there, because without continually striving to be better, you can never achieve anything. So you have to make changes to keep getting better, but
right, or even to just freshen things up at times, because sometimes the players just get stale, and training gets a little boring, and you start losing the plot a bit, and you just kind of need to shuffle things around. Just like you say, even one new drill, one new game, as long as it fits in with the team and what you're trying to do, that's fine. That's the idea.
Exactly. That's that should be. Some change should be built into your concept.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the blog posts that I wrote relatively early on was the idea of most of us at one stage, at the early stages of our career, were drill collectors. Everywhere we went, we took down new drills, and we could have filled up, reams of paper. For these days, I don't know. Reams of many, many bytes and bits.
Megabytes.
Diagrams and, megabytes. Many megabytes.
Yeah.
With diagrams and descriptions and now video clips and all that. And YouTube is obviously full of them.
Oh, yeah.
But it always comes down to, and I've heard a lot of coaches talk about having, after the point where they had a handful of games and drills that they use on a regular basis, they just adapt them to what they need to accomplish in a particular session. And that goes right back to what Arise was having to say, is everything has to be adapted to purpose, your yep. purpose in your context.
Yes. You can't train something that's not appropriate to your age level, skill level, height level, competition level, every situation and every group is unique. And even a coach is different from year to year. I have to say
that too. Very true. Sometimes I'm different from training to training, but that's not really. That gets us back to Stelios's comments about consistency.
We're only into the third or fourth podcast here, but I think we've broken a record for referencing the most interviews in one podcast.
True enough. Well, fortunately, I think we're running out of time for this one.
Well, with Stelio, that's maybe seven. So that's good work by us.
Right.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and more, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com/podcast. Got an idea for a future episode or want to ask a question? Send an email to podcast@volleyballcoachingwizards.com.